Welcome to Journeys, a Maxa podcast. I'm here today with Angela Lau, who's a piano instructor at Maxa. Angela, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, it's great for you to invite me.
Of course, absolutely, absolutely. I'm excited to talk about your story, your history, your journey today. So we're going to start by taking you way back and into when you first got started in music. Did you start with piano or was it something different?
I start with piano first. Okay. So my recollection is when I went by in the shopping mall back at home, there's a music shop. And I always look at the window and I'd be like, oh, mom, can I enroll in some piano lessons or can I grab a piano back home? And because I was in kindergarten, my parents thought, oh, that must be like an intermittent passion,
yes, of course
she will fade away with the thought of learning piano,
right.
Since I persist, they brought me like an electronic keyboard and enroll me for lessons to begin with. And as I got more serious, after I'm not sure how long, maybe 6 months to a year, then they decided, okay, it's a good idea to get her a real acoustic piano.
Oh, wow.
And piano has been my main instrument since then.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack. Okay, already. Okay, so this is very interesting. So you're, 5 years old? Is that right?
Five and a half to six,
okay,
yes.
Okay. Now, what do you think it was? Because I'm imagining the store probably maybe had more than just piano there, right? I'm guessing. So what was it about the piano that, you know, interested you, do you think?
Well, as a 5 year old, I don't know if I was thinking straight until this day because I don't know what came through my mind. But I think for most kids from Hong Kong or most Asian kids, piano is the easiest approachable instrument that you can find and is easily accessible. And I've heard a lot of piano music when I grew up. So it's just my instrument to start with. And dad also really loves to listen to orchestral music and guitar music back in the days when it's a really popular instrument. And I think grew up listening to it. I really want to pick up an instrument and it so happened to be my first instrument.
Okay. Well, that's just interesting to me because, you know, usually when people are finding an instrument that speaks to them, it's usually not completely, you know, completely out of the blue. You know, there's some like background, there's some like there's something. So what you're if I recap what you're saying, so you, like there you had a sort of been exposed to the piano, you'd heard piano music, you'd heard orchestral music, you'd heard guitar music, and you could see this in this shop, and I guess the obviously they were nicely displayed, right? Probably they're trying to sell pianos to parents of 5 and 6 year olds, obviously. And so there was something that interested you, And I actually think this is pretty amazing. A lot of people do start, and it makes sense. I mean, a 5 or 6 year old, you're not going to buy a 9 foot concert grand Steinway or something for them, right? So you start with something, and then you stuck with it, and then but very quickly they got you an acoustic piano. That's quite a commitment from them, and kudos to them for investing in that for you. Do you remember what it was like to have the, you know, the acoustic piano at your home to practice on?
It was great because it's a huge instrument for a 6 year old.
Right.
So it felt very magnificent. When you're trying to say there must be some sound quality that attracted you to the instrument, I think the ability to be able to immerse your body parts, because some other instruments that I've also played, it's more localized, but the piano, it's an instrument that you couldn't grab and get hold of. You have to imagine inputting the sound.
Yes,
and you
true.
Get to use the pedals. You get to try to learn how to balance yourself. And I think it is one of the reasons why I really enjoyed playing the piano.
That's so interesting you say that because, you know, it's true. If you're with a violin or a flute or something, you're holding the instrument, you know, and with a piano, especially when you're six, it's a much bigger than you are, right? And there's something maybe about that that felt very good to you, the bigness of the instrument itself. Is that, do you think that Am I capturing that right?
I'm always really tiny when I was small, okay. So anything would look big on me.
Well, that's a good point. Okay.
But it does sound great to be able to create that symphonic sound. Mm-hmm. When I learned piano during my earlier days, my teacher always told me, imagine this as a certain instrument in the orchestra family,
right.
Or imagine this as a string quartet. Mm-hmm. So I always have to pick up this percussive sound of the piano and translate it into something else.
Yes, yes. I think that's one of the fascinating things that we do as pianists is we're creating illusions a lot of the times. Not with all styles of piano music, but with some styles, so certainly in classical music, we're often imitating other instruments, as you say. And in some ways, we have to know, like when you imitate something, you have to know the sound of that instrument extremely well, the instrument you're imitating, I'm saying here. So anyway, but let's talk about your very first teacher then. So what was your experience like with your first teacher? Was it scary? Was it exciting? What do you remember what that was like, your first piano teacher?
So my first piano teacher, I think we got acquainted with her because she also teaches at the music shop that is near my home.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I switch around different teachers.
Okay.
And she is a teacher, I think, where university or fresh graduate from university.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, like most Asian families,
mm-hmm.
We like to push the boundaries of how far we can go. And it's
right.
a really popular trend
mm-hmm.
back in the days to mm-hmm. take exams where
okay.
in the ABRSM,
yes,
Associate
yes,
Board
yes,
exams.
Right, of course, yes.
And when I first started piano mm-hmm. with my first piano teacher, she was like, let's enroll Angela in grade 2 piano exam.
Wow. Okay,
and
this
then,
is the beginning?
I think a couple months. And then
wow,
my mom was
okay.
like, no,
okay.
piano exams are going to cost a lot. Let's skip,
okay.
let's skip the grades. And then let's do grade 4 right away instead
wow.
of 2. So let's
okay.
let's prepare
wow.
it for a little longer, but let's
okay.
enroll in
oh,
that
I see,
grade.
Oh, I see, I see, I see.
And
okay.
then I think a fairly amount of time later mm-hmm. on, and I switched to another teacher mm-hmm. and continue on that process.
With
so
the,
it was
the...
a really brief moment with my first
okay,
teacher.
Okay, okay, okay. When you switched teachers, do you remember what the reason was you switched that to that teacher?
Every time we switched piano teachers,
mm-hmm.
it was a progress of me getting to the next stage, actually.
Okay, okay.
And
I
some of the times, because all of my teachers back in Hong Kong are
mm-hmm.
female
mm-hmm.
teachers, so some of the time when they are starting to build their family and
okay.
they need to take time off,
sure, sure,
then
sure.
I switch to another teacher,
mm-hmm.
and some of the occasions I progress to the next
I
stage,
see.
And they
okay.
recommended me to go to
okay.
the next
okay.
teacher.
That's very interesting, you know, because as part of this this theme here with journeys is like, okay, you've had these. Yeah, the consistency was in the piano itself, and you were devoted to piano. You loved the piano, and still you have these guides along the way, and the guides were changing a lot for you. And that's a little bit different than what I've heard from other journeys. A lot of times people will stick with a first teacher for several years, and then they'll switch right at a certain point, and they'll switch again, and then they usually go to college at that point. But you had a lot of switching, and I'm wondering what do you have any? Of course, that was normal to you. That was just what happened. Do you have a feeling looking back on that now? Do you have a feeling was that an advantage to keep changing teachers, or was it a disadvantage, or was it just sort of like, well, that's what I did. That's what, you know, that's just normal to me.
Certainly every time when I need to depart
mm-hmm.
A like teacher-student relationship
mm-hmm.
with one of my teachers, I feel uneasy,
of course.
Because I've built a good relationship
yes,
with them
yes.
and I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was growing up, from a child to a teenager,
mm-hmm.
adolescence to
mm-hmm.
like an adult,
mm-hmm.
They shaped who I am, and
right.
As part, they also observe my growth.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
moving to a next stage, having to build a relationship
mm-hmm.
with my next teacher
mm-hmm.
is a challenge because you're going into the unknown.
Right,
so,
true.
But I get to absorb a lot of new knowledge
mm-hmm.
or new ideas, concepts
mm-hmm.
along
mm-hmm.
the way with
mm-hmm.
the new teacher. Yes.
Did you feel like, do you feel like one could look at that is sort of like, well, I'm going to take what I resonate with, what I find best in each of these teachers, and I'm gonna amalgamate that, you know, and join that with my own self, and then in a way you've got a very rich educational background, right? Because you've got all the different styles. I'm curious, though, did you feel like the teachers were coming from different teaching styles, or were they typically, you know, a similar teaching style, even though different teachers?
I think going into maybe the fourth and fifth teacher. Yeah, you know, as a child, you go through a certain stage of exams. Absolutely. And then competitions.
Right.
And then when you got referred. And then also as part of myself growing up, I developed more independent thinking.
Yes.
And how I react to a certain style of music. Then I, from my fourth and fifth teacher, then I absorbed the strategy to how to practice.
Okay.
And how to listen and play in style. Because previously, I was just playing, practicing the music from the start to the beginning, and occasionally finding some trouble spots and going that over and over again. But we were not thinking of the music structurally, or we're not thinking about, for example, performing strategies. Like, you need to anticipate going on stage and what might happen.
Yes,
and that's how
we practice those
spots.
Actually, what that reminds me of is there's a big difference in performance-oriented teaching. And I think a lot of, not generally speaking, you're not going to start with a performance-oriented teacher, but when you're ready for that, it is different to work with it, because that's what you do. You have to be very strategic, and we do have a very different, our bodies change under pressure, right, and under performance stress, and it can be a nasty surprise if you're not ready for that. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of people give up performing instruments of any kind when they're not properly prepared to handle a performance. So that's good that you ended up with performance-oriented teachers when you were performing, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, sometimes performance-oriented teachers can be a little bit too harsh, and they can turn off people that are just getting started, which is why I think it's important to go through different stages. Some, you know, you want a student to love music and to be excited about music. And then at some point, though, when they're performing more, a performance-oriented teacher is the best for them to go with, if they're performing, of course. So it sounds like that's what you did. Now I'm curious, okay, you said fourth or fifth teacher. Okay, how many teachers did you have before you went to college then, would you say, before college, about?
Let me think through. Before, when I came to the podcast, I was driving. I'm counting. And I was like, I think it's five, if I'm correct.
Okay, that's quite a few, because you're six and you're going to college, what, at 18?
Yes.
Right, so that's, what, 12 years. You've had five different teachers in those 12 years. Is about. Okay, that's quite a lot. Very interesting, you know, that, as I said, that's kind of one of the things I love about these podcasts, is we get to find these little surprises that doesn't have come up on your bio, right? I had five teachers before I graduated, because it's probably not something that you would put in a short bio, but it's very interesting in terms of your, I would say that you had a through line, an independence through line for yourself, right? You stayed true to the instrument, you didn't give up, right? And you took something positive from each of these people. Now, I'm curious, okay, so you said you played other instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Were there, before you decided to go to college for music, were you considering other instruments, or were you considering another career, perhaps, something else?
Yes. I think music has always been an integral part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was definitely considering that as one of my options going to college. And during picking up subjects to study in college, I have also considered, I think, probably something related to economics or journalism, or but nothing really fell through, I think. Somehow at that moment it was a music that pops up to my mind.
Okay, so but you did look at other things.
Yes.
Yeah, at some point, and maybe this point happened very early, you know, for you, it sounds like, but when you decided, okay, I want to go study music in college, what was that like, and did you have a conversation with your parents about that, and your teachers? Like, how did that you know what I mean? At some point, you're like, you have to actually apply, right? In an audition. So you need to tell these, you know, people in your life, like, and about your decision. So I'm curious about, you know, again, emphasizing, how did you make the decision? And then how did you communicate that to your teacher and your parents? And what did they say?
I've always been very transparent about my decisions, but I think nowadays people learn and progress as they grow and as adults continuously as well. Mm-hmm. So at 18, maybe I wasn't very sure what the career path of a music degree will bring me, but it was just my passion driving me through. So when I informed my parents and my teachers that I'm going to go on to college auditions, I just researched the schools I want to get to, and I was also thinking, okay, so teaching and performing might be what I do after I graduate. And because my parents aren't from a musical family, and my teacher also is more oriented on the performance side, and I think everybody has a consensus that teaching and performing is the main two options after graduation. So nobody kind of walked me through all the process. So that's what I told them, and that's the positive feedback of go ahead is what they told me. Yes,
that's great. That's great. And then, so you ended up going to college in London, and and that's, you know, quite a distance from Hong Kong. I mean, how did you come to the decision to go to college in London?
Because Hong Kong was once a British colony,
of course, right,
and
right.
a lot of my peers, like musical peers, also went to UK as a destination for studying music or even other subjects. So it just pops up to my mind as I do my research. I'm going to audition to this school, that school, and other schools in Hong Kong with music programs. And somehow I just landed there. So I was bringing up, when I was 18, that's my learning curve. That's what I did with my research.
Right. Well, so what it is again, that's a big jump in the journey, right? Because you're going to go from your home, and that's a big scary time. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, I desperately wanted to like get away from home. And then I did get away from home and I was miserably homesick, you know, and wanted to go back home. And I actually went back and studied in my hometown and then went off to college afterwards after a while. So that's a big jump. That's what I'm saying. It's a big step. But you had friends already going to college in London, and musical friends as well. So that probably helped. You knew something, you know, it was safe to go, you know, you had some sort of, you know, it wasn't like you were going to Antarctica or something to study music. You know, you knew, had some idea. Did you go visit before you decided to go there?
I did, like, the summer before I was enrolled in a summer program.
Oh, that's so good.
And I went over to observe what my future school is going to be. And actually, as strange as I'm saying, it wasn't I wasn't really homesick.
You weren't?
Because when I was in my last year of elementary school, my school offered a boarding program.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was used to being away from home.
I see.
And
I
thought at that moment at 18, I thought, I was independent enough to
go abroad
and study.
Right,
and
right.
My parents had that conversation before whether to study abroad at a boarding school before going to college.
I see.
So it was always at the back of my mind that I could do this and I could overcome it if should any circumstances that I have.
Okay, well, so you were very well prepared. I mean, you're super well prepared, and it's great that you also got to go. I mean, getting a chance to visit and be in a summer program, that is such an amazing way to get a taste of not only a city and a program, but a particular teacher to try out. And now, who did you study with then in London?
You mean as my undergraduate?
And your undergraduate,
In
your undergraduate. Oh, that's right, because you got your bachelor's and your master's there, right?
I got my bachelor's, and for my master's, I moved
to the States.
Right,
that's right. Okay, I'm sorry. So, for your bachelor's, who did you study with there?
So first I was with Professor Ruth Nye. Mm-hmm. She is a Australian concert pianist mm-hmm. that studied with Claudio Arrau
oh, wow.
before,
okay.
and then she settled in England. Mm-hmm. And I studied with her 1 year, and she retired.
Okay.
So I,
oh, okay.
yes, then I went into the studio of Gordon Fergus Thompson,
okay.
which is an avid interpreter of Scriabin.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. Okay, yep. Fantastic. So you that's interesting to get someone at sort of the end of their career. And then transition again. So that way you transition.
Yeah, not most of the time it wasn't my active choice, but
right,
I'm so
right.
glad that uh-huh. I get to work with
right, them. Right. It sounds like great exposure to two great artists.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were working with them, did you have initially with the first teacher, did you have a choice of teacher or did they assign you someone? How did you end up in her studio?
Yeah, so I do have a choice to write down my preference, mm-hmm. and Professor Ruth Nye is one of the teachers that my last teacher mm-hmm. in Hong Kong recommended, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. she studied briefly with.
Okay. And what was the name of your last teacher in Hong Kong?
It was Julie Kwok.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Great. Okay, I think it's important to mention. We have so many. We'll put them in the description
mm-hmm.
when we're done with editing the podcast. So, okay, so you're in London, and eventually you come to the United States, which is yet another big leap. I'm sure there were some cultural differences between Hong Kong and London, and my guess is there's a few cultural differences between London and Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you, but let's talk first about how did you decide on Cincinnati?
So now, after 4 years of undergraduate studies, I came to a more sensible mind of doing more research.
Okay, did more research.
Now,
I
so
okay.
I applied to a couple of music schools, mm-hmm. and I decided to come to the U.S. Thinking that I will get a more comprehensive music education
okay. mm-hmm.
With more history and mm-hmm. theory classes,
mm-hmm.
but also to be able to do my own research.
Okay.
Because in UK, music students are more performance oriented.
I see.
And
okay.
you get a lot of gigs, engagements
mm-hmm.
to perform
mm-hmm.
and to be a freelance musician,
right.
per
okay.
se. But I was looking for a more sustainable and stable teaching career
gotcha.
Or
okay.
a more
mm-hmm.
comprehensive approach to
mm-hmm.
how to navigate my way out of school.
Gotcha. That's very smart. Very, very wise to be thinking that way. So you felt you could find that in Cincinnati. And who did you work with in Cincinnati for your master's program?
This time I stick around for
okay.
the entire master
yes.
and the doctorate
okay.
program. So I was with Professor Soyeon Kate Lee,
okay.
who is now moved to teach at the Juilliard.
Oh, fantastic.
School.
Wonderful.
Yes.
So it's for the whole time. And now you're actually almost finished with your doctorate, your DMA.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost done. And I want to talk a little bit about your project that you're doing for your DMA project. I was excited that we got to hear this presentation, I think about 6 months ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
You performed and gave us this fantastic and fascinating project on composer from Hong Kong. And tell us a little bit about tell us about what it is, your project, and then how you decided to create this project.
So I think growing up, I have a more a list of program that I work with that
mm-hmm.
are on the conservative side,
okay.
more
right.
classical,
mm-hmm.
and the most modernist that I go is to the 20th century. Maybe I play Poulenc, Netrorem, Orshevsky. But
right.
then, as I was thinking, I didn't really bring down to my own roots. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't even, as like a fellow Hong Konger, I didn't
mm-hmm.
quite dig into what are the compositions that has been offered to
right.
us to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to know the composer community
mm-hmm.
back at home
yes.
A lot more. So that's why I had the thought of let's do some research again.
Yes, more research.
And uh-huh. I found up an annotated catalog
mm-hmm.
Done by Paige Lee
mm-hmm.
from Florida State
okay.
University
mm-hmm.
of the Asian female composers
okay,
with
great.
Their list of works.
Mm-hmm.
And I first researched through there. And
mm-hmm.
and also what came in the back of my mind is when I before I left for UK to do my undergraduate studies, my former teacher, Julie Kwok, she's also a composer, and she gifted me a copy of the birthday Dada to perform. So I performed that already before, and I thought it's a good start to try to piece up a whole program together.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty cool. So that your final teacher in Hong Kong, also a composer, gifts you this piece, which is very amazing to do, like the that, and then you performed that. And so that was maybe planted a little bit of a seed in your mind. And then you did more research, and I tell you, you're a very research-oriented person, which is good because then you can find new things and find things that are interesting that people aren't doing already. I mean, for me, it was very revelatory, your presentation, because I knew none of these composers. I mean, I feel sorry that I don't know them, but I'm glad that you showed the music to us. It's such a great variety and just wonderful, wonderful music, you know. And it's also good for them, I would imagine, to have someone performing their works. And so when you... And in some ways, it must have been hard to select, you know, only those few, because I'm sure there's many more that you couldn't select. How did you come to that group? And if I recall, was it five composers or?
It was five.
It was five composers. Yes. Okay. So how did you, you know, with probably an abundance of choices, how did you select those and the works that you are playing?
I think I tried to find available recordings of the works that are listed in both their website and in the catalog. If there is any to listen to, I tried to see if I would anticipate or imagine myself performing it, and whether they fit well into a program. Mm-hmm. And I just tried to shortlist them first. Mm-hmm. And as I'm going through them, I slowly develop the idea of the program to be of a human cycle or life in general. So my program first started with the birthday Dada, like when you first got acquainted with the world when you were given birth. And then the second piece, I'm thinking of my order.
Right, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and then the second piece is the commission piece that I worked with composer Quan Learning, who is an instructor of music technology at the University of Central Missouri.
Okay, cool.
And he and I worked on a piece to bring Cantonese opera elements into the piece, like a miniature, having different imitations of Chinese instruments, for example, opera gongs and wooden block. Mm-hmm. And we thought it's a good way to introduce our culture to the American audience, because that's where I first performed at my graduate school in Cincinnati.
Okay.
And I think this is a good sign to show that Hong Kong is a melting pot. And
that's a good point, right.
And that's like a part of my life theme. And then I brought the more nature side of me into the program with three Chinese paintings by Pu Shan Cheng, and it's paintings that are drawn by Wu Guangzhong, Wu Guangzhong about lotus ponds, wildleaf flowers, and cloudy mountains. And then to add on, it was the five sketches of water by Hong Ki Cheng, also about nature. By ending the program, I brought the more spiritual side of life. It's Six Phenomena by Bun Ching Lam. It's more sadness and brought the spiritual aspect or questioning side to leave an open ending to my program.
Yeah, that's a beautiful description. And I've seen this, and actually those paintings were amazingly beautiful, the lotus-oriented paintings. And I remember you sharing with us the about the Chinese opera and what elements are used on the piano, and it was quite striking. And I just remember, and it's been, you know, several months, and I remember it very clearly, that it was a very compelling and eye-opening and ear-opening experience. It's wonderful art and music, and it's... I don't know if I picked up at the time. You may have mentioned it, but in terms of your life cycle with that as well. And so when are you going to, is this presentation still in the future for for the DMA with this, or has that already been completed?
I'm looking forward to seek opportunities to present this again, maybe in some conference, and if there are future collaborations with some of the composers, and maybe I could present that again.
Awesome.
And I'm still in the conversation with some of the composers after I performed and I showed them their recordings. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the positive ends of this project is I learned how to work with living composers.
Which is so amazing, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because not many times that of what you're studying, or if you're not actively approaching, that you know how to work with different composers. Because before I've thought, oh, composers are really really introvert, or composers are in their own world, musical world, and I don't know how to reach out to them, or you think we're in the different spectrum. But working with different composers, I figure out, oh, we are all human beings, and we're all growing at our different life stages. We experience different things, and they all have their own wisdoms and their own approach to their life, into their writings. So I learned a lot in how to communicate and how to understand their music, and sometimes by, you know, researching their interviews.
Yeah, that's that's amazing. Yeah, that's one of the things we are blessed with living composers, is that we can get to know them, and we do forget that composers, I think this is a big mistake in classical music with non-living composers, is that we tend to not think of them as human beings, and we tend to, and that makes it very hard to approach and meld with their works on that human side, and that's very much a part of it. And when you're working with living composers, especially multiple living composers, you're seeing all those different personality styles, and it's a collaboration, and it's a living collaboration, and I'm sure it has to have impacted your study of what I'm going to call non-living composers. To work with these composers that can actually email or talk to, you know. Well, that's amazing. So before we wrap up, what do you have in terms of other, besides these this work with these living composers, are there other works that are that you're studying right now that you're excited about?
Now I'm rearing back because I've worked with a modern composer's project. I'm currently trying to work on Chopin's Nocturne and Prokofiev's Sonata Number 8.
Oh,
but since now I've got more teaching duties, that I sort of put this learning new repertoire at the side.
Understood.
As I prepare for my two piano recital as well.
Right, of course, of course, yes. And at some point we'll have you both on, you're part of Duo Orchid, and you guys perform all over, and I sometimes we'll have you both on to talk about your story as a duo, but I particularly wanted to talk to you individually first. But anyway, keep going, I interrupted you, sorry. So you're working on Prokofiev 8th and then a Chopin Nocturne and, and the duo piano stuff at the same time, and teaching a lot. That's a lot of things.
One of the main things I learned throughout my journey is time management.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Yes, so critical.
So at times I was thinking, should I keep an alarm of doing each of the tasks that I have assigned for myself for the day? And I realized sometimes it doesn't work quite well that way of just restricting that time to time frame to do a certain task, but I do set reminders of what I should get done by the day. But time management, not just as a musician, like for example to be there to play and collaborate with somebody, and to be there to teach, and then be there to perform, but sometimes it's more about getting to my daily lives, like how to get my chores done.
Absolutely.
How to do my meal prep.
Yes.
And how to find time to talk to my family and friends.
Of course.
And it's just about managing time. If you do that well, you'll manage your other aspect of your life well.
That's great wisdom. We are journeying. On our journey, we have to eat. We have to have friends. We have to have helpers. We have to have guides. We have to work on ourselves. We have to do so many things. And it is hard to manage time. But some people don't make that a priority to focus on learning how to manage time and experimenting, and you can get really tied in knots, you know, if you're not careful. So it's good that you're managing all of these things. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been such a pleasure to speak with you about your journey, and thank you all for also joining us today. I wish you well on your journey and look forward to seeing you next time. Thank you.